the headlines, Iran slams Germany's move to call for a UN Human Rights Council session on the recent riots, saying it will not allow foreign meddling in its internal affairs. The Russian president warns the West against putting a price cap on its country's oil, saying this could have grave consequences. An NGO tracking gun violence in the United States says the country has witnessed more than 600 mass shootings for the third straight year. Hello and welcome. Your world news coming to you live from our headquarters in Tehran. My name is Gisum Shahmadi. Iran's foreign minister says his country is fully committed to human rights and it will not allow foreign intervention in its internal affairs over such allegations. In a string of tweets, Hossein Amir Abdullahian slammed Germany's anti-Iran moves. He said Berlin was not only the main provider of chemical weapons to the former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein, but keeps violating human rights through unjust and inhumane sanctions. He said Germany and its Western allies are abusing human rights mechanisms to perpetrate more violations. The remarks came hours after a UN Human Rights Council convened on the request of Germany and Iceland to discuss Iran. The Council also adopted a resolution that called for an international probe into Iran's response to the recent riots in the country. Earlier, Iran's representative at the Geneva-based Council censured the West for its double standards and biased approach on the issue of human rights and women. Hadija Karimi says appalling and disgraceful is what certain Western countries are doing by using human rights as a tool to advance political goals. Earlier, we talked to human rights activist Feras al-Najim. He said the U.S. and its allies are trying to disrupt and disunite Iran by waging a media war on the country.
You know, this is a biased media war against Iran right now at this moment, because the U.S. And its allies and puppets are all following a certain narrative and agenda, and that is to disrupt and disunite and cause major problems inside Iran, because their major issue is with Iran living a sovereign life and having sovereignty and strength and willing to fight, you know, the imperialist system in West Asia, and also to support the Palestinians. So they're all right now working in collaboration to try to weaken Iran as much as they can. They have failed miserably over and over again for 40 years, but they're trying, you know, their last few cards inside Iran right now. How come they're not rising up in the United Nations issues such as the Palestinian Holocaust, the Palestinian oppression, the Palestinian occupation, the murdering of a journalist in Palestine? How come they're not speaking about that? Is that not a human rights issue that should be spoken about and dealt with? And shouldn't the ones doing these crimes be accountable? Shouldn't they be spoken about? Why all this silence?
Iran's foreign ministry has strongly condemned an anti-Iran resolution adopted by the UN Human Rights Council, dismissing it as totally unacceptable. The ministry said the resolution that calls for an international probe into Iran's handling of recent riots was an anti-Iran move by a small group of Western countries. It condemned those countries for pushing Human Rights Council to adopt their will in the form of an anti-Iran resolution. The ministry also expressed regret that the Geneva-based council has once again been exploited to serve interests of a small group of countries. It said the resolution was a strategic mistake made by Germany and some other Western states on the basis of miscalculations and pressures from special political lobbies and anti-Iran media. The ministry added that such political short-sightedness will ultimately harm the interests of those countries. Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps says that it has targeted anti-Iran terrorist bases in the Kurdish region of northern Iraq. The IRGC forces use drones and missiles to target positions of separatist terrorists in the Kurdistan region. The terrorists are largely involved in inciting riots in Iran. Iran has repeatedly warned Iraqi Kurdish officials to stop the activities of terrorist groups along its borders.
Iran is stepping up its ante against the positions of separatist terrorist groups in Iraq's northern region. Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps has conducted a new round of drone and missile strikes against strongholds of hostile separatist terror groups in the semi-autonomous region of Kurdistan. According to reports, the IRGC ground force fired drones and missiles against positions of the so-called Kurdistan Freedom Party on the outskirts of Iraq's northern city of Kirkuk. The raids dealt a heavy blow to the separatist terror group. This is not the first time Iran pounds the positions of terror groups there. Since September 24th, the IRGC has frequently launched air raids against the positions of the terrorists who are holed up in Iraqi Kurdistan, seeking to ignite riots and unrest in Iran's western border cities. Iran has highlighted that its forces will continue their operations until threats being posed by the terrorists are eliminated and they are disarmed. Iranian military officials have also warned ordinary Iraqi people to evacuate areas close to the hideouts of separatist terrorists. Earlier, Iranian ambassador to Baghdad, Qasem Alisadegh, said Iran has told officials from Iraq's central government and the Kurdistan regional government that Tehran is serious about its national security after a number of sensitive Iranian military centers had been targeted from the Kurdistan soil. Iran has on countless occasions warned Iraqi Kurdistan's local authorities that it will not tolerate the presence and activity of terrorist groups along its northwestern borders, saying the country will give a decisive response should those areas become a hub of anti-Islamic Republic terrorists.
جمهوری اسلام ایران تأکید کرده بود که نسبت به تهدید امنیت و امنیت سرزمینی خودش به ویژه در مناطق و شهرهای مرزی و روستاهای مرزی تهدیداتی که از ناحیه اقلیم کردستان عراق متوجه جمهوری اسلام ایران خواهد شد و در اونجا نسبت به فعالیت‌های گروه‌های تروریستی تجزیه طلب سکوت نخواهد کرد و مبتنی بر قوانین و مقررات بین المللی از امنیت خودش حمایت خواهد کرد و از امنیت شهروندانش دفاع خواهد کرد. طبیعتاً چنین اقدامی در همین چارچوب صورت گرفته.
The IRGC has been carrying out strikes on positions of the terrorist hideouts in the Kurdistan region since late September. The IRGC says terrorists from northern Iraq have recently entered Iran's border cities. They are reportedly capitalizing on the protests sparked by the death of an Iranian woman who passed out at a police station and died days later.
Over recent weeks, Iran has witnessed foreign-backed riots in several of its cities. Terrorists have seized the opportunity to instigate unrest and insecurity in the country. Just recently, former U.S. National Security Advisor Bolton admitted that terrorists are being armed with weapons imported from Iraq's Kurdistan region. Bolton also confessed that he had seen images of Kurdish forces trained and armed in Iraq. Over the past weeks, Iranian security officials have seized large caches of weapons provided by foreign spy services at its borders. Riots broke out in Iran in mid-September after the death of Mahsa Amini. The 22-year-old fainted at the police station in Tehran and was pronounced dead 3 days later in hospital.
Living conditions of Afghan people are worsening day by day. Many are struggling to make ends meet while the Taliban rulers have been adamant in their attempts to repair the economy. Rahmatullah Baghban reports from Kabul.
A recent Afghanistan welfare monitoring survey by the World Bank is sounding the alarm bell about the devastating living conditions of Afghan people. People are struggling to put food on the table while lacking access to many other simple necessities. Almost half the population has reported a constant decrease in monthly earnings.
We are facing many difficulties, especially in recent weeks. We slid into a bad recession. I work from dawn to dark, selling potatoes and onions. But so far, I haven't even made a penny to buy some loaves of bread for my 6 children. Our house is cold and I have not bought fuel. I am concerned about the health of my children.
The survey has also found a rise in unemployment rates across the country. More and more Afghans are finding it difficult to land a job. The situation is only expected to get worse during the coming winter months. World Bank officials have called on Taliban rulers to take action on improving the living conditions of Afghan people. The Taliban says it does have plans, but needs access to the Afghan assets frozen by Washington in order to make them work.
With regards to addressing people's livelihoods and poverty, I confess there have been problems, and the major reason for the economic crisis and deprivation of Afghans is that their assets are crucially frozen. Furthermore, Afghanistan is practically sanctioned. Those who were defeated in Afghanistan use sanctions as tools for advancing their foreign diplomacy, but we are trying to neutralize the effects of sanctions and move Afghanistan to gradually become stable and self-sufficient.
The U.S. withdrew its forces from Afghanistan in 2021, but that has not stopped American politicians from asserting pressure on Afghan people. The war-torn country has not yet got the chance to repair the damage caused by more than two decades of Western aggression. As the winter comes closer, more and more Afghans are struggling. People here believe urgent support from the international community can be a lifeline for millions. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Russia's President Vladimir Putin says Western plans to put price caps on Russian oil could have grave consequences for the global energy markets. Putin has stated that such actions are contrary to the principles of market relations. The European Union members have so far failed to reach a consensus over the price level for Russian oil, as the cap is set to take effect on December 5th. It would ban firms from transporting or providing insurance for Russian oil shipments sold above the fixed price. Following the outbreak of the war in Ukraine, the U.S. and its European allies have imposed unprecedented sanctions on Moscow, especially targeting its energy sector. Russia has said that it would not supply oil to the countries that support the price cap. Lower supplies generally push up oil prices in the market. Energy ministers warn of economic disaster for the EU in 2023 unless a plan to secure affordable gas supplies can be agreed between member states. Jerome Hughes reports from the Belgian capital.
The EU is currently paying more for gas than any other region in the world. The European Commission had proposed to cap natural gas prices at €275 per megawatt hour. The idea was totally rubbished by the bloc's energy ministers at a meeting on Thursday.
A ceiling between €150 and €200 is a realistic ceiling, and this could help us reduce gas prices and therefore reduce electricity prices.
But any sort of a cap could result in gas suppliers moving their tankers to other parts of the world where there is no cap, like Asia.
If we really see that this mechanism is designed in the way that that we will lose LNG cargoes to other international markets, then we can suspend it.
As things stand, in the EU, there is no guarantee of a manageable gas price or even a gas supply for 2023.
If we cannot keep our economy running, we will not be able to support Ukraine, and we must do everything to avoid such scenario.
Those representing small to medium-sized businesses are looking for EU support amid high inflation and growing interest rates.
If we not want to fight and employment and youth unemployment, we need to take care about the growth and competitiveness of European SMEs.
A debate in the European Parliament this week on promoting stability in the Middle East heard that the initiative would help ensure energy security for the EU. However, one lawmaker raised the West's previous actions in the region.
Leaving broken countries, hobbled economies, violence, trauma and permanent conflict. And at the end of that, we stroke our chins, pretend we've nothing to do about it and ask how we are going to promote stability in the region. You have got to be joking.
EU energy ministers will meet again on the 13th of December to try and reach agreement on the vital question of 2023 gas supplies. Analysts say this crisis best illustrates how sanctions against Russia have backfired. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
An NGO tracking gun violence in the United States says the country has witnessed more than 600 mass shootings for the third straight year. According to Gun Violence Archive, there have been 609 shooting incidents this year so far, in which at least four people other than the assailant were shot. Last year, there were 690 such cases across the U.S., up from 610 in 2020. On average, there has been around 1.7 mass shootings per day in the country this year. The NGO's database puts a death toll from gun violence in the U.S. at around 40,000 in 2022. More than 18,000 of these deaths were homicides.
And now with that, we come to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Britain's biggest supermarket chain, Tesco, has limited its customers to three boxes of eggs as avian flu outbreak hits supplies. Tesco has become the latest grocer to ration eggs due to supply issues. We take a look at the British media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. British newspaper The Guardian has more for us. Tesco has become the latest grocer to ration eggs due to supply issues. Customers are now limited to buying three boxes of eggs at the checkout because of the dual blows to poultry farmers of rising costs and an avian flu outbreak. Tesco, Britain's biggest supermarket chain, follows Asda and Lidl in setting limits after they restricted purchases last week. At the time, the retailer said it had good availability with no limits, but now a temporary rationing policy has been brought in. Tesco said it is working hard with its suppliers to ensure a good supply of eggs, but has taken the step as a precautionary measure. British farmers have been hit by soaring energy costs in recent months, and the price of wheat has risen because of the conflict in Ukraine. The grain is a key component in chicken feed. They have also warned about the lack of money they get from supermarkets for the sale of eggs. At the same time, Britain's largest ever avian flu outbreak has led the government to tell farmers to keep all poultry and captive birds indoors. There have been 252 cases of the virus since the outbreak began in October of last year, with 118 of them coming since 1st of October this year. Millions of birds have died or been culled in the last year. The government announced on Monday, 21st of November, that a bird flu outbreak had been found at a farm near Barnard Castle in Durham. All birds at the site will be culled, and a 3-kilometre protection zone and a 10-kilometre surveillance zone have been set up. After some supermarket restrictions were announced last week, the Director of Food and Sustainability at the British Retail Consortium, Andrew Opie, said, "While avian flu has disrupted the supply of some egg ranges, retailers are experts at managing supply chains and are working hard to minimise impact on customers. Some stores have introduced temporary limits to the number of boxes of eggs customers can buy to ensure availability for everyone." British newspaper The Express has more for us. Tesco is the latest UK supermarket chain to limit egg buying to only 3 boxes per customer. It comes after Asda and Lidl set similar rations last week. British poultry farmers currently face rising costs for chicken feed and energy, at the same time as being hit by an outbreak of bird flu. It has led to a squeeze on the supply of eggs on supermarket shelves. Tesco said last week that they had good availability with no limits on buying, but was nonetheless working to protect supplies with producers. As a result, it has introduced a temporary rationing policy following Lidl's decision to limit egg boxes to 3 per customer. Similarly, Asda has set a 2-box limit per customer, with other grocers such as Morrisons and Sainsbury's being yet to make any rationing policies. Sainsbury's has said some stores are running low on eggs and supplies have been sourced from Italy. This is despite the fact that they preciously committed to buying eggs only from British suppliers. Morrisons has previously said it was not facing supply issues. Alongside households, farmers too have been hit by rapidly rising energy costs. They have also had to buy more wheat, a key ingredient in chicken feed, which has risen as a result of the war in Ukraine. Both Russia and Ukraine are producing about 30% of the global supply of wheat. But perhaps more frightening for British farmers is the country's largest ever avian influenza outbreak. The outbreak has led to millions of birds being killed in the past 12 months in the United Kingdom. British farmers have said despite the price of dozen eggs having risen by 45 pence in supermarkets since last March, they've only received between 5 pence and 10 pence of that increase and are not being paid a fair price for their eggs. Therese Coffey, the Secretary of State for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs, has said in the past that she is not concerned about the overall supply of eggs in Britain. The British newspaper The Daily Mail has also covered the same story. Tesco has become the latest major supermarket chain to impose rationing of eggs. Customers are restricted to 3 boxes as bird flu disrupts major supply chains. Last week, it was reported that Asda and Lidl had also set limits on eggs for shoppers. The United Kingdom is facing its largest ever bout of bird flu with a highly pathogenic variant. Tesco has joined other supermarkets in limiting the number of boxes of eggs customers can buy as the impact of rising costs and bird flu continue to take their toll. The shopping chain said it had introduced a temporary buying limit of 3 boxes of eggs per customer as a precautionary measure. Earlier this month, Asda and Lidl announced limits on egg purchases at some of their stores. The National Farmers Union, the NFU, has called for an urgent investigation into the egg supply chain disruption. The National Farmers Union said the Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs, DEFRA, should look into whether a declaration should be made under the Agriculture Act 2020 to ensure much-needed support for egg producers. The government said the situation is being monitored but insisted the United Kingdom's food supply chain is resilient and that no significant impact is expected. A Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs spokesperson said, "We understand the difficulties that rising costs combined with the bird flu outbreak are causing for farmers, and we are working with industry to monitor the egg market. Britain's food supply chain is resilient. There are 38 million laying hens across the country, and we are not expecting any significant impact to the overall supply of eggs." The National Farmers Union, NFU, said a declaration under Section 20 of the Agriculture Act would enable DEFRA to use its statutory powers to provide much-needed support to egg producers whose livelihoods are under threat. The National Farmers Union President, Minette Batters, said it is critical that the government acts now to give egg producers the confidence that they need.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are...
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners, ladies out there. Welcome to another episode of Muslim Lady. Well, I am Asma, your humble host, and here with me, as the common ritual of recent sessions, we have Sister Zainab. We are going through the ethics of the life of Sayyidah Zahra salamullah alayha. Actually, this is the book that we have in here, and we're working on it. We're picking out the outlines that are very much important in order to be useful for the Muslim ladies out there. And Sister Zainab is helping us with that. Assalamu alaikum, Sister, and welcome to your program.
Walaikum assalam, Sister Asma. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, just would you like to give us a brief introduction about yourself and the book, of course?
All right. I am Zainab Askari, and I have been... reading this book, Ethics and Lifestyle of Lady Zahra salamullah alayha, I read it some long time ago. I had been teaching it to different languages, English, and I have been teaching it in Kashmiri.
Mm-hmm.
I have also been teaching this in Urdu. And I have got a very, very good response. People who did not know Lady Zahra salamullah alayha, especially Muslim women, have been very, very thankful for getting to know about the ethics an individual should have.
Yeah, and as long as we have been familiar with this book, since you're teaching us about it, it's been quite interesting, actually.
Yeah.
We went through too much of ethics related to table manners, related to the beauty, which is something very much attractive to all the women. And also we went through slipping and plenty much more. Well, we talked about the rituals that we must be careful before we go to sleep, according to the lifestyle and manners of Sayyidah Zahra Salamullah Alayha. Now, I remember that you said we are going to have some rituals for the aftermath.
Exactly. So we talked about sleeping in, I guess, two sessions. And now, when to wake up?
Yeah.
You have been working all throughout the day. Now you're tired and you want to sleep for so, so long. You don't want any disturbance. But what we have, again, Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him and his family, recommending Lady Zahra, salamu alayha. He says her, O Fatima, don't be among the ignorant people who sleep in the time of the morning Fajr prayers until the sun rises.
Yeah.
So in between this time, he
that is the dawn.
Highly recommends her to not sleep from the very early dawn to the sunrise.
Yeah.
So this is the time of provision, sustenance, whatever you get, because the angels are distributing
the blessings of the sky.
Yes. And don't be among the ignorant, Fatima. Don't go for sleep this time. You know, all the women out there are always behind this. How do I get this barakat in my life? How do I get the blessings? How do I get more in my life? How do I increase this sustenance or a provision, whatever you are yourself providing to your family or your husband is helping you financially? How do I increase it? So here's the secret.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anyone in the world who loves to be poor?
Of course not.
Of course, we don't have any such people. But we have so many recommendations. We have another saying from Imam Ali al-Islam. If you don't want to be in the poverty line, do not sleep in this time from the morning dawn to the until the sun rises. From the basically the time when you when the morning prayers start, the azan, when you hear the call of azan, and then when the sun rises.
The time of twilight.
Exactly. Do not sleep in that time.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'll tell you what happens in that time.
And since all the mothers and all the sisters and all the Muslim ladies out there are
they have to start their day out there.
Yeah, and they are very much careful, very much attracted to know more about how to, just as you mentioned, how to gather all the blessings in their family.
Exactly. As I said, like Imam Ali Islam says, do not sleep in this time. He also says another time. He says the time when you offer your Maghrib prayers and your Isha prayers, do not, you know, the time which is very close to that time, do not sleep in that time. So he recommends two times to stay out of poverty line. And women are so much attracted to this thing that we don't want to be in the poverty line.
Yeah, they're so much eager.
Because they are suffering, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Even if a man goes out and earns money, or even a woman goes out and earns money, she wants it to be, you know, lasting for a long time. Or she wants barakat, she wants blessings in everything. She wants increase.
And you know what? As a mother, as a wife, you would be very much sad if something wrong happens with your family. You would be very much sad if you go through poverty.
You would be actually sad if you're not able to sustain your family for throughout the month. You have to wait for example, you know, everyone receives salary on the first of the month. And then you are, if it gets finished on the 10th, you're very, very upset with this. The most... Someone who gets affected the most mentally, physically even, is the woman.
Yeah, that's very much true, sister. Thank you.
So the secret is here.
Yeah.
Wake up early.
Yeah. So thank you, dear listeners. We're talking about when to wake up, actually, and when not to sleep. And we're going to catch up the topic after a little break. So thank you for staying with us.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
Welcome back, Muslim ladies. We are talking about when to wake up and the rituals of the aftermath of sleeping. We said that we've been tired, we've been going through too much of chores and works, and we know that nowadays ladies are working just side by side their men, definitely, and they would feel worn out. So what happens is that they go to bed they sleep, and then maybe they have to actually go to work the other day. So she has to wake up in the very much morning, because that is going to be the satisfaction of Allah. And at the very same time, the time you actually mentioned, the twilight between the dawns, is going to be the time of dispensing all the blessings to the inhabitants of the earth.
Exactly. So that's the time when these blessings are distributed. And Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him, suggested his daughter, don't be among the ignorant if you want to have those blessings, yeah. If you want to actually, you know, grab them. And then we have from other imams as well who quote the same thing from Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him. Now I'll give you some of the examples from the real today life. Among the non-Muslims even, we have seen early births of very, very successful. We have Michael Gass, who's a president and innovator at Starbucks. Starbucks is a multinational coffee house chain. And then she wakes up exactly at 4:30 a.m. and goes running. And then when she starts her day like this, she has been saying in many interviews that this is her 15-year routine. And that's how she turned a team of just three to today managing 33 foreign countries. It's not a joke. Like a woman who started her team with three people is now managing 33 foreign countries. And she says, what is my reason why I do this? She says that because I am taking care of myself, morning runs clear my mind. Morning runs come when you wake up early.
Yeah, that's very true.
So we have another, like, as many of the world's most powerful women, they have discovered that rising before the sun is more than just a personal bonus. It's an edge in the cutthroat corporate environment. I'll give more examples, like Avon Chief, Indira Jung, wakes up at 5 a.m. She hits the gym and is at her desk by 8 a.m. We have newswoman Anne Curry. She's out of bed at 3:45. That's so, so early now, because there are some night owls who just go to bed at 3:45. There's another Vogue editor. She's a very long-time Vogue editor, Anna Wintour, who is on the tennis court by 6 a.m. And even the research has shown that early birds really get out the worm. There are birds who are in search of worm all the time. They get the worms when they go out for searching them very early. It's a research.
And sister, you know what? It's very much common. We can see it with our eyes. There are plenty, since we're living in a Muslim country, we see plenty much of these Muslim ladies as doctors, as even pilots or teachers.
Interview any successful woman, she will tell you definitely she's not among the night owls. She's not among those waking up throughout the night. There are early risers.
Exactly.
And there's one more research from North Texas University in 2008 who identified that morning people earned significantly higher grades than those who wake up later. So, you know, there are so many people like who have proved that this was about success. Now, what does science say about it? Because I have, you know, since I read this, I always try to compare what Islam says with what science says. So science also says that when your retina, eyes, see light, they do not induce hormones that create sleep. But when they see darkness, they induce hormones that make you feel sleepy. Your body also is a fine-tuned machine. So do not disturb it. Do not do like we have been recommended. Night is for sleeping, night is for rest, and days are for working. Because there are so many people out there who debate that I'm very, very satisfied in, I'm very, very actually relaxed in working at night than in the morning hours. Try it in the morning hours.
Yes, Sister Zainab, that was very much true. As I told you, since we're living in a Muslim country, we can see that with our eyes. There are plenty much of women, Muslim ladies out there that are doing plenty much of wonders out there. You know, they're being mothers at the same time. They're handling different jobs outside the home. Yet, just like you mentioned, they sleep very much early at night and then they wake up very much early in the morning. You know what? We had a professor at university and then he used to tell us that the owner of the house is the person who comes to the home actually the most early of everyone else. They wake up very much early in the morning, and then she slips the lastest one in the home. She is going to be the one who actually owns the credit of being the owner of the, you know, the table of that home. So actually what he meant was that the
make others sleep early.
Exactly,
so that you sleep early.
Yes. So the center of a house is a woman that is giving with her warmth and with her knowledge about what she's doing and going through. She's going to be the center of the house. And we are telling all these things to Muslim ladies because they are the ones who are going to teach the other generations, their children, to be true personalities. So, dear ladies, let's go for a short break and we'll be back in no time. Thank you for staying tuned.
When you wake up early, you can do a lot of things. You can create a healthy breakfast, because when you wake up late, you, as a mother, as a daughter of the house, you do everything late.
Exactly.
You try to just warm up some freeze stuff, or that's not healthy.
You would be in a hurry all the day.
Yes, you'll be throughout in your old jobs, mm-hmm. and you will be mentally, you won't be productive. But research out there have proven that early risers are very, very productive. They are very, very systematic. They are very, very, you know,
and very
organized.
Successful, of course.
They're organized. Mm-hmm. And since they're organized, they're successful.
So thank you, sister. And thank you, dear listeners. In recent sessions, we were talking about the rituals of resting. And then we learned plenty much of things. Actually, from the lifestyle of Sayyida Zahra, salamullah alayha, we learned that when she went to bed, she actually turned her bed into a mosque by reciting the Holy Book of Quran and doing the rituals that you already mentioned in the previous session. And then in this session, we talked about getting out of bed pretty much early, because then the early risers are the more successful people. And since we want all the Muslim ladies out there to be successful, we are just mentioning these things in this program in order to make them enrich their knowledge of the lifestyle of their role model, that is Sayyida Zahra, salamullah alayha. So thank you Sister Zainab, and thank you, dear listeners. Until another session, I bid you farewell, and wassalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I know I'm waiting, waiting for something to happen to me. This waiting comes with trials and challenges. Nothing in life is free.
IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
The Zionist regime should be included in the annual list of shame for its violations against Palestinian children. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. Palestine Chronicle wrote, more than half of the population living in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip are below 18. In fact, one can confidently say that half of the people of the occupied West Bank and besieged Gaza Strip are children. Anyone who wages a war against these two territories through house demolition, arrest without trial, shoot-to-kill policy, and humiliation is waging war against children. At times, whole military brigades of the Zionist regime army, accompanied by elite units, border police and police, chase a boy and, in most cases, kill him or at best arrest him. If there is anything that changed in the last few years in what finally the United Nations was willing to call the colonization of Palestine, it is the intensification of the Zionist regime shoot-to-kill policy. And although so many of Palestinians understand that the new Israeli regime cabinet will not change the policies the previous cabinets pursued, one can expect further brutalization in the war against the people of Palestine. The news has reached us of murder by the Zionist regime troops of Fula Ramsey Abdul Aziz Al Musalama. She was on her way to celebrating her 16th birthday. She was with others in a car near Beitunia when the Zionist regime troops, without any reason, opened fire on the car and killed her. Needless to say, the Zionist newspaper reporting the incident blamed the driver and did not even bother to mention her name. The killing of children is not a new aspect of Israeli policies toward the Palestinians. By April 1948, the Zionist regime military leadership of forces began to strategize more clearly its policy towards any population that would be left in the villages they occupied during the 1948 ethnic cleansing. One of its clear guidelines was to either kill or send to a prison camp, at the discretion of the commander on the spot, men at a fighting age. The command clearly defines what is meant by men, anyone above the age of 10. Very much like any destructive Israeli regime policy since the massive expulsion and killings of 1948, a new method of incremental piecemeal action and policy became the norm. It is a very deceptive policy, as whomever you want to alert is faced with a killing of one or two persons every now and then, and the dots are not easily connected to produce a damning indictment. This was true in the early 1950s, but of course, since then, the numbers are massive and this incremental killing is far more visible. In November 1950, the Zionist regime army shot dead three children ages 8, 10, and 12 from the village of Yalo, while in 1952, the Israeli commando murdered four children, ranging from ages 6 to 14 in Beit Jala. A year later, among the five shepherds the Zionist regime killed in February 1953, one was 13-year-old boy from Alberg. The incremental infanticide at times is replaced by a more intensive killing of children. During the First Intifada, according to the Association of Israeli and Palestinian Physicians for Human Rights, Every 2 weeks, a child under 6 was shot in the head by the Zionist regime army. During the Second Intifada, 600 Palestinian children were killed. Among them are the 12-year-old Mohammad Ad-Dore, the 14-year-old Faris Odeh, and 11-year-old Khaled Al-Mughrabi. 5,000 children were wounded. In 2007, the Israeli regime air force killed 8 children of the Shahada family in Gaza. In the first wave of the attack on Gaza in 2008, more than 300 children died, and another 30 in 2012. At the highest death recorded in 2014, with more than 550 children. Put differently, since 2000, 2,250 Palestinian children were killed by Israeli regime army and security forces. This is equivalent to the killing of nearly 45,000 children in Britain by military or police force since 2000. Why is it so important to record these grim and horrifying data and define clearly its legal and moral significance? For a few reasons. First, the fact that only here, in an alternative media outlet, you will be aware of these atrocities is an indication of the hypocrisy of the Western media and political elite when it comes to Palestine, compared to the compassion shown toward children in Ukraine. Secondly, these figures accentuate the existential threat Zionism still pose to the Palestinian people and their future. It is not only land that the fabricated regime of Israel covets, it is intent on continuing the destruction of the people themselves. But most important than all is the infuriating exemption of Palestine from the international discussion of the mass killing in general and that of children in particular. Take, for example, the international definition of mass killing. It is defined as the deliberate actions of armed groups, including but not limited to state security forces that result in the death of at least 1,000 non-combatant civilians targeted as part of a specific group over a period of one or less. In the First and Second Intifada in 2009 and 2014, the number of Palestinians killed by the Zionist regime exceeded by far 1,000. Nowhere in the UN or another human rights organization recording mass killings worldwide do the Palestinians appear as a case study. The game is not of numbers, of course, but much more about the ideology that facilitates such mass killing, a kind of inhumanity only possible if the humans you target are dehumanized, an ideology that leads in many cases to genocidal policies. The definition of genocide, according to Article 2 of the UN Charter on genocide, includes mass killing, bodily and mental harm, and physical desertion as indicators of such policies. The report of the Special Representative of the Secretary General in October 2009 and updated in November 2013 lists 6 grave violations of international human rights law regarding children's rights in armed conflict. There is no armed conflict in Palestine, and yet 3 of these grave violations occur daily in the colonized West Bank and occasionally in massive numbers in besieged Gaza Strip. Killing and maiming of children, attacks against schools and hospitals, and denial of humanitarian access. Some of the Israeli regime policies enacted during the siege on Gaza in terms of denial of food, energy, and above all medical help create a criterion by itself that should have been added to this document. In August this year, UN Human Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet expressed alarm at the high number of Palestinians, including children, killed and injured in the occupied Palestinian territory since the beginning of 2022. She was referring to the killing of 37 children from the beginning of the year until that August, and was particularly horrified by the killing of 19 children in 1 week. She stated, "Inflicting hurt on any child during the course of conflict is deeply disturbing, and the killing and maiming of so many children this year is unconscionable." Meanwhile, Press TV reported the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has called on the United Nations to include Israel in its annual list of shame for its violations against Palestinian children. In a statement on the occasion of the World Children's Day recently, Hamas urged the world body to pressure the Tel Aviv regime for the immediate release of all Palestinian children being held behind Israeli regime bars. The resistance movement also called on international human rights groups to protect the Palestinian children against the Zionist regime. The UN marks the World Children's Day while the suffering of the Palestinian children who are exposed to the most heinous forms of crime by Israeli war machine and a systematic racist policy is ongoing, the statement read. Elsewhere in the statement, it said about 3 dozen Palestinian children had been killed by Israeli regime forces during the current year and 160 others suffer from various forms of psychological and physical torture in Israeli regime prisons. The Palestinian Prisoners Society, PPS, recently said Israeli military forces had arrested more than 750 Palestinian children during arrest campaigns across the occupied West Bank and East Al-Quds since the beginning of the current year. The PPS in November 2020 highlighted rights violations committed by Israeli regime forces against minor Palestinian prisoners. The youth are often abducted from homes in the middle of the night, detained for hours without food or drink, and verbally abused. Israeli regime prison authorities also forced the children into confession by threatening to torture them. Interrogations are done without the presence of a parent or a lawyer. In May 2020, a study found that the Zionist regime had arrested up to 16,500 Palestinian children since the outbreak of the Second Intifada in late 2000. The Detainees Affairs Commission of the Palestine Liberation Organization also revealed recently that the Israeli regime had detained over 50,000 Palestinian children since the occupation of the West Bank and East Al-Quds in 1967.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.